Hey there, Mike Stelzner coming to you with a fascinating update you might not be familiar with. Did you know that Social Media Examiner can deliver all the marketing training, news, and trends, insights that you need into your inbox 3 days a week when you sign up for our newsletter, and it's completely free? Simply visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates and take your marketing to the next level.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Podcast, helping you navigate the social media jungle. And now, here is your host, Michael Stelzner.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me for the Social Media Marketing Podcast, brought to you by Social Media Examiner. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for marketers and business owners who want to know how to navigate the ever-changing marketing jungle. Today, I'm going to be joined by Justin Levy. And we're going to talk about how to build a no-cost B2B influencer marketing program. A couple keywords to focus your attention on is this is a B2B focused episode, but it's just as relevant for B2C focused marketers. And this is a program that you can follow that's not going to cost you anything but your time. I think you're going to find today's episode absolutely fascinating. By the way, I'm at Stelzner on Facebook, at @Mike_Stelzner on Twitter/X. And if you are a new listener to this podcast, would you be sure to follow this show on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss any of our future content? Let's transition over to this week's interview with Justin Levy.
Helping you to simplify your social safari. Here is this week's expert guide.
Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Justin Levy. If you don't know who he is, he's an award-winning marketer and head of social media, influencer marketing, and community at Zoom Info. He previously worked at three different companies you might be familiar with, including DemandBase, ServiceNow, and Citrix. Justin, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
Super awesome to see you at Social Media Marketing World recently. And Justin and I have known each other forever, but this is his first time on the show. So Justin and I will explore how to create a no-cost influencer marketing program. And that means you don't have to spend any money on developing influencer marketers. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But before we do, Justin, I would love to hear a little bit about your backstory. How'd you get into marketing? How'd you get into social marketing? Start wherever you want to start.
Yeah. So it goes back to 2006, 2007 or so. I was working in a kind of fresh out of college job, just one of the things you go do for a 9 to 5. And my best friend had a steakhouse, an Argentinian steakhouse, about an hour away from my house. And one of the best little kind of steakhouses you've ever been to. Oh, you know, everything's cooked over a wood fire grill. Everything's fresh to cut the day of and what have you. But it was losing about 20-25% every month. And he wasn't paying himself. He wasn't able to pay some of his personal bills, running behind on kind of business bills and whatnot. And this was right when Twitter was coming out and kind of Facebook was breaking out of college only. And 2006 was when HubSpot was founded. And so, you know, this whole kind of era of social, what would become known as social, was coming too. And so I said to him, why don't we try this? There is no cost. It's funny, we're talking about no cost campaigns, but there is no cost to do this. I don't know anything about it, but why don't we try? So that's what we did. We launched a blog, an off domain blog, because my feeling or assumption was that no one would want to visit a blog that was on the domain of the restaurant, because they would assume that it would be like, what's tomorrow night special, or, you know, we're throwing this event next week. But instead, we built a blog that brought together a bunch of foodies and people that were passionate about food and in the food industry. So we did everything from people writing about their favorite recipes or their favorite holiday or how to do this specific thing. And that became very well known. And at the same time, while we explored a couple different channels, the one that actually ended up hitting the most for us was YouTube. And we started a weekly video show, and it was on a crappy point and shoot, like little Sony camera or something. It was edited with Windows Movie Maker on an old laptop. But we published it, and we kept publishing weekly. And it never became something that was viral or had tens of thousands of subscribers. But people that were students at the Culinary Institute of America or something like that started to reach out and say, hey, listen, I missed my class and I was able to make up for what I missed, because it would be stuff like how to unzip a tomato or how to fire roast beets. And it was all these chefy things that he was teaching people how to do. Nearly at the same time, the restaurant had grown back to black in revenue and then grew to 30-35%. And it stayed there for 20 months straight, adjusted for seasonality. And that naturally brought with it mainstream media attention. It came in, you know, kind of came about into the marketing arena. And being in Connecticut at the time, and this restaurant was in Western Mass, I started to go up to Boston quite frequently and speak at little meetups and things like that, back when there were little meetups where 20 people would gather in a coffee shop to talk about social.
You probably met Chris Brogan at some of those, didn't you?
Yep. So Chris and I met, and the way that we met was kind of interesting. So we had met at a conference, and I kind of told him the story a little bit. And it was actually Inbound Marketing Summit, which was HubSpot's first go at conferences. They would obviously go on to launch Inbound. But he had posted something once, a tweet, sent out a tweet, I'm driving to New York for Jeff Pulver's conference. And him and Jeff Pulver go back a long ways. And does anyone want to ride with me? And I lived on like a street path on the highway towards New York from where he would be driving to. And I raised my hand. I said, sure. Like, I'll do it. And I thought that he would have had a bunch of people flock to him, and no one did. So it was Chris and I drove down to New York for the day and went to this little event that Jeff was having. And we talked the whole way about just the view of what social is and could be for business. At that time, he had just published Trust Agents, which was one of the kind of seminal books in the industry. And he was in a different job, but having a lot of companies reach out to him, big companies like, hey, come speak to us, come workshop or whatnot. And we went out to a Chili's near my house on the way home and came up with this idea. And he said, you know, I really want to open an agency, and I think you're the right person to come do it with me. Would you be game? The first client was Citrix. Over the next year and a half or so, we worked with PepsiCo and Microsoft, AMD, Dell, Molson Coors, kind of, you could fill in the list. A couple of years later at Blog World, Citrix had always told me if I ever wanted to come over, they would create a position for me. And a couple of years later at Blog World, I was having drinks with the VP of marketing and said, I don't know what this world is on the tech side, but let's kind of give it a go. And from there, my wife and I moved out to the Bay Area and started to figure out what life in Silicon Valley was like.
That's an amazing story. And for those that don't know who Chris Brogan is, he was one of the original OGs. And I specifically remember he was like the biggest, I mean, it was like him and Gary Vee who were like the influencers on Twitter. I mean, I've since become very good friends with Chris, and it's just such a cool story that you rose your hand, man. And you ended up working with Citrix and ServiceNow and DemandBase, and just kind of share a little bit about what you did at DemandBase and what you're now doing at ZoomInfo, which is your newest job.
Yeah. So I was recruited to DemandBase to initially lead social and influencer. And so they had had an agency that led social for them before I came in, but they had never had a dedicated kind of FTE role for influencer. And so I came in to do both of those and to build out that function. And we went on to launch all sorts of influencer campaigns. It was something that I believed deeply in and really focused on developing long-term relationships and partnerships with influencers. And we did that on a shoestring budget. DemandBase isn't a publicly traded company. It's not like it has a huge budget to do things. We certainly did have paid engagements, but a lot of it was finding unique ways to engage with influencers. Throughout a point in that came the ask from the board and from our senior staff to get more involved in private communities, to become active in current communities like Rev Genius and Pavilion and Mole Pros and all these other ones that exist, but then to also launch our own private community. So I've launched and built that community for VPs and above in sales and marketing roles, grew that to be about 1,000 people, left demand base, and then came over to here to ZoomInfo and have a much wider kind of range of activities under me now. But of that is social influencer and community.
So a lot of these businesses, if I'm not mistaken, are B2B businesses, right? I mean, are all these companies you've worked for are B2B. Now, what we're going to talk about today applies just as much as B2C as it does to B2B, but the B2B audience is happy to hear a B2B story because we don't get a lot of B2B folk on my podcast. Now, there are some people that love your story, Justin, and might even be familiar with you, but maybe they're not so bought in on influencer marketing. So why don't you just talk about, as we're recording this in 2024, why are influencers and why is influencer marketing so important before we get into kind of the details of how to do it?
Yeah, sure. So I think it comes back to the fact that we tend to trust humans, right? Like if I see you post something about as a friend of mine or as someone that I follow, even in the industry, if we were friends, I see you post about something, an event, a product, anything, a SaaS-based tool, and you share your positive experience in an authentic way. I built up that trust with you. And so therefore, I'm more likely to go use that product, tool, whatever it might be, than just seeing the brand post that's in my LinkedIn feed, because I already know what they're going to talk about, right? They think they're the number one tool. They think they're the only one. Their competition sucks, whatever, right? So we build trust in other humans. And that's reiterated every year nearly by Edelman's Trust Barometer, that's in a bunch of other studies from Forrester and Gartner and what have you. So I feel strongly that influencers, especially in B2B, are the way to go. In B2C, it's been something that's been there for a while, right? It started kind of with mommy bloggers and what have you, but it's a lot easier when people think of influencer marketing. It's easier to understand in B2C. You're trying to influence one person or one profile of a person, right, to purchase X product. I want to influence you to buy a TV. You fit the ideal customer, and all I have to do is tell you all the benefits and factors, and I can do that through influencer relationships. B2B is a broader buying group. So you have to come up with ways to actually influence people that have trust with their groups, right? Because you have access and you have a community that I don't have access to as a brand. So by working with you and by engaging with you and building that trust as a brand, and we have aligned values, your community and even their community that's chosen to engage with them, thanks to the kind of ripple effect and network effect, helps the brand and helps the influencer, right? Their community trusts you. You and the brand have shared values and therefore work together. And I think that ultimately that's why it's so vitally important for brands to work with influencers, as well as people to in their communities to understand the influencer relationship.
Why don't we define what an influencer is in your book, just so people understand what you think it is?
Yeah, I think that it's anyone that's developed a level of trust and engagement with their audience. I think that people tend to, and unfortunately, the industry has shot itself in the foot a little bit with it, is to define it as just on a number of followers basis. Because you have 500,000 followers, that makes you an influencer. That doesn't make you an influencer. Like I've researched people and found people that have 100,000 followers before and have no engagement on their posts because all they do is repost their company content. They have 100,000 followers because they're someone popular at a big brand, right? They're the CMO at a fill in the blank name brand. So naturally, a bunch of people follow them. You could have someone with 500 followers but their community is engaged with every post. They are in a very niche environment that every piece of content they put out is well thought out and is written for that community and therefore gets high engagement. So I don't look at them based on followers. I do think when you get into strategies, you do have to think as part of, okay, if you're doing something with broad brand awareness, you might, you know, look for someone with more reach than someone else, or, you know, so you do have to consider that stuff. But it's in someone that's an influencer is a creator who drives engagement with their community, just not based solely on followers.
Well, and I would imagine, you know, everybody that's listening might be thinking about Instagram and YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter/X and ... But they might not be thinking about bloggers, podcasters, email newsletter lists, membership communities, Facebook groups, ... right? So people can yield influence in a lot of different mediums that people are overlooking. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think that also there...
Forums,
yeah. I think that there is an assumption that platform is only for one type of audience. For example, default assumption that TikTok is only for B2C influencers, right?
Right. Or LinkedIn is only B2B.
Yep, exactly. So that's not the truth. There's different angles to be taken with creators on those different platforms, right? But no, you can have, I mean, hell, I know you have a large list and there's other people that we're friends with that have 250,000, 300,000, 400,000 email subscribers.
Right. Those people have a lot of influence. Yeah.
They have a lot of influence. They have a high open rate. They have a high engagement rate. If you don't consider them an influencer,
you're missing out. Yeah.
You're misaligned. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with, when it comes to building a no cost influencer marketing program, what's the first thing we've got to do?
So the first thing is research. And since you're not going to use a tool because it's cost prohibitive, or you just want to test the waters with this, right? If you're kind of listening to this, watching this podcast, and you decide, okay, I hear you and I want to go figure this out. Maybe at some point down the road, you do get a tool if you have the budget, but you have to start with research. And there are a few main ways that you can conduct this research, all of which is manual. And I do apologize for that ahead of time.
Hey, free usually means you got to do a little work, right?
Yes, exactly. So you can do a couple of things. One, ask your community. Who do they find valuable? So if you're going to run a list of the top 25 demand gen people to follow in 2024, put up a LinkedIn post and ask your community. Who do you follow in demand generation or revenue marketing or something of that nature, who we should feature? Tag them below. People fill your comments typically with tagging other people and whatnot. There's a really easy list to get started with to research. You can also do that. Now take that to private communities. So if you take, for example, someone, a community like MoPros, that's for marketing operations professionals. If you were doing a list, or, you know, you want to engage with marketing ops folks, go and join MoPros. It's free. Go into their Slack channel and you have a wealth of people there to kind of engage with, look at, research. And then by far the most intensive research or resource intensive is, and that takes the most time, is to do manual research in LinkedIn. And that, you go up to the search bar and you'll type in whatever the profile is of the person you're looking for, right? It might be director, demand generation, director, demand gen, director, rev marketing, whatever, all the titles you can think of, because you have to remember some of the shortened titles, right? Mine is head of. I technically have a title behind the scenes with HR, but mine is head of, right? So you got to look at that title. But then you want to choose the connections, right? So you want to look at initially first and secondary connections. That's going to give you the most info. And then go into each one of those people's profiles, and you're going to look at how many followers do they have? What are their titles? Like, is that aligned with what the search you did was? How frequently do they post, and what their level of engagement is on those posts? If there's someone that posted a month ago and their previous post was 5 months before that, obviously they're not someone that you probably want to engage with, no matter how many followers they have. So you go through that process and you develop your list. Usually I end up adding 2 to 3 times the number of people that I actually will then end up featuring, because I don't want to just look and go, okay, like I'm going to feature 13 people and okay, I hit 13 or I hit 14.
Let's pause for a second, because we're getting ahead of ourselves on the feature side of things, because people don't even know what you're talking about. And we're going to get to that in the next book. I'll tease that we're going to create something that's going to attract those people to us. I want to go back to, we're doing our research, we're asking on our social profiles, whatever, Facebook, whatever, LinkedIn, who are the people that are maybe the experts in this thing, right? So if I was doing it, and let's say I wanted to cover influencer marketing, I might ask on all of my social platforms, who are the experts that I need to know in influencer marketing, right? And I'm going to get a bunch of people tagging people across all these things, right? And I'm going to go ahead and probably throw them into a spreadsheet, right, Justin? And then I might also ask inside of a Facebook group or two that I belong to, right? And then I might also do some LinkedIn research. And it sounds like at this stage, we're gathering names and then we're trying to kind of rank order them. The ones that are most engaged is what I'm hearing you. The ones that seem to really be active with their community. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. And again, it goes back to the kind of follower versus engagement piece, right? You want to look followers and, you know, overall reach is important. Like, let's not knock that by any means. But you also want them to have a content that's very highly engaged and that's in line with what you're researching them for. It's great to have selfies and photos of your dog and stuff like that. It absolutely. On LinkedIn, I've even published before that I don't think that it's a Facebookifying or whatever you want to call it of LinkedIn, but you should be publishing content that people are engaged with, that's on topic for your area of expertise. So yes, then you are trying to stack rank those people based on overall engagement and followers.
So how many do you think, when we're in the research stage, should we be trying to identify the top 10, the top 20? What's your thoughts?
It honestly depends on how large of an outreach you're going to do. And I know we'll dig into that more.
Right.
If someone was just getting started, and I see that saying that I've done lists that are 100 people. So at that point, I'm looking up 150, 200 people, stack ranking them, and then figuring that out, right? I typically would recommend that someone or a business start out with 15 to 25 people. So therefore, you're probably looking up 25 to 35 or so people to stack rank and whittle down.
Right. Awesome. And I would imagine that you could also Google search this and see all the names that everybody's been writing about and maybe come up with different names that no one's been writing about, right? Because in the social media marketing world, you're going to see Mari Smith probably on every list. You might see me on some lists. And I would imagine at a certain point, you don't want to necessarily go after the ones that are ridiculously well known, because those are going to be the hardest ones to engage with. Does that sound fair?
It absolutely does. Yeah. So you want to find... Some of those people are great, right? Some are going to respond and they're at a level in their career or how they choose to engage with their communities that they will respond. They do want to work with your brand and work with you on that. The nice piece, if you're working with the lesser known folks, or at least a subset of them, right? You might have a few of the more well-known. The lesser known folks are more the kind of up-and-comers. And therefore, they are the ones that are trying to build their influence. They are the ones that will communicate out that they were featured or that you've engaged with them, because they want that frankly, it's an ego boost, but it's validity within their community, with their business, within their industry.
Love it. Okay, so let's assume we've done all the research and the next step you've kind of teased a little bit is content development. So what do we do with all this research? Help us understand like the strategy behind all this.
Yeah, so you're going to want to develop a list. So you have this list of people, let's call 25 for sake of argument. You want to include them in a blog post. It's going to be the best thing for your brand. Drive SEO, it's, you know, drive traffic back to you. And the way that I like to draft these posts is using a headshot of that person, easily findable, right click into their LinkedIn profile, their Facebook, whatever, and save the image. So include their headshot, their name, company, LinkedIn, kind of all that good contact info, identifying information, and then a little bit about them. Now, you can do this either copying their LinkedIn profile info, like in their about section, updating it, because not some people write third person, some people write first person. So you
ChatGPT it, right? Make it a little better.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. You could go to ChatGPT. You might have to look in, like I've, for example, for people that don't have a lot written about them, I've gone and looked at their recommendations and said, you know, this person was recommended by, like Stelzner said, that this person was the best demand gen person that's ever worked for him. And, you know, that will go into it. But regardless, write something about them, a wire feature in them. You could do the next step one of two ways in this article. I've seen it done where brands will post couple example articles to showcase why they're being chosen.
So links to articles or posts that they have done or YouTube videos or something along those lines?
Exactly. So say you wrote an article on Social Media Examiner and you filmed this video for this other interview, and I'm proven, you know, as part of this, this is why you want to follow this guy. Link to that article. The other method, and I choose to do this one more often, is a screenshot of LinkedIn posts that is proven why I am suggesting you follow that person. I am saying I am featuring you on the list of 25 social media marketers to follow in 2024. I can say everything I want about why to follow you with your background information. That's great. It's helpful. But if I put a screenshot of a LinkedIn post, now you're proving your influence through that, right? Because if I'm the reader, I'm reading that and going, oh, wow, yeah, Mike knows his stuff. Now I'm going to click out and go connect, go follow, whatever it is.
I like that. We also, when we were prepping for this, mentioned creating images that.
Yep.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
It's all well and good to write your article, right? As the brand, you, of course, can and should share it on your social channels. But where you get the most reach and where you start to develop that relationship with these influencers, some you may already know, some you may not, is by creating custom social cards for them. So every one of those people that you feature should get a social card that has their name, company, title, your brand, you know, your logo and what have you, the name of the list. So top 25 or, you know, 25 social media marketers to follow in 2024, just as an example, in your headshot. Because then what you're going to do, and you can do that if you have a creative team, obviously use them. If not, use Canva. It's not, this isn't difficult, right? But what you're going to do is, so you have this blog post, you've written out this blog, here's the 25 people. Now I have my 25 social cards, one for each person. And now you're going to reach out to each one of these people.
Real quick, before we talk about the outreach, I want to talk about this thing you're calling a social card. I think this is language I've not heard before. I would imagine it's what you call it, right? I don't think people know what a social card is, but I'm imagining it's a lot like the images that speakers post when they're speaking at a conference, right? Like I'm excited to be speaking at, it shows their face, it shows the name of the conference, the dates. This would be something similar, like top 25 social marketer, Mari Smith, you know, with her picture and like a cool looking graphic, right? Something that they could share across the socials. Is that really where, what the purpose of the social card is?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's spot on the purpose of it.
Okay. So far we've talked about the first step, which is research, right? And we've talked about the second step, which is this content development step. And we're about to get into the third step, right? Which is this outreach, right? And talk to me a little bit about what we need to do to prepare and how we reach out, because assumedly we've got a list of 15 or 25 people. We've written a post, and I would imagine that post could also be published on the socials, right? You don't have to publish it on your blog. It could be published on LinkedIn, right?
It can depend on the length of it. Have fun with where you're going to publish it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you have your blog post, you have your creatives, and now you are going to move on to that next stage of reaching out to everyone.
Did you know that we can deliver awesome marketing info directly into your inbox? Simply subscribe to our weekly newsletter that comes out 3 days a week. You won't miss any of the updates going on in the world of social marketing. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/get updates.
If you have their email, which is a big if you have their email, you're going to reach out to them. And you want to celebrate them, over the top, celebrate them. So the subject line is going to be something like, congratulations, Mike, for being named one of the top 25 marketers to follow in 2024, right? You want them to see this in their inbox of the 50 emails they got today and open it. I think that's all of our goals with any email we send. But for this purpose, you want to make sure they open it. And then inside, you're going to tell them, hey, listen, we're featuring you because of your continued contributions. You're on this list with some of these other brands because you want to give that validation to the other brands that...
You say brands, you mean influencers, the other people, right?
No. I do. I need brands. So, for example, if you get an email from me and I said, Mike, you are named as one of our top 25 social folks, you're on this list with people from Salesforce and HubSpot.
I see what you're saying. Assuming you're dealing with people that work on the brand side, right?
Yep, exactly. It's because it gives that recognition. I mean, if you're that person, you're going, oh, wait. Yeah, I'm on this list with people at companies, like real companies that I know and I respect and
that's cool.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And then you're going to give them a sample social message. And it's something basic, but I'm really excited to have been named one of the fill in the blank, along with folks from brands like fill in the blank. Check it out. Here's the link. And then you attach the social, that card that you've created that has all their information and, you know, the name of the list.
Well, and let's pause for a second. This would also be useful if you also had, because in some cases, maybe people aren't putting together a list of people that work for brands. Maybe they're just influencers in an industry. But maybe there's some big influencers. Like, and you could say along with people like Mari Smith and other, because sometimes people like the idea of affiliation, right? So if you don't have brands, but you do have really well-known people in the space, or Robert Cialdini, if you're dealing with people that are in the psychology space, right? That just gives them a little bit of cachet to post this out on the socials and get excited about it, right?
Exactly. It's just some type of affiliation,
right?
Whether that's brand or person, influencer tier. If you're being featured in an AI type post, you better believe that
Paul
you
Ratzer.
Probably want to mention Paul,
yeah.
And Chris Penn and, you know.
Yeah, Matt Wolf, exactly.
Type thing, right?
Okay, cool. So do you have any examples of ones you've done either for your current employer or some of your past employers?
Yeah. So one that I've done when I was at Demandbase, I did two years in a row, was that we partnered with the Women in Sales Group. They're a company that's run on LinkedIn. They're most well-known on LinkedIn, and they also have a private community. But we ran a list called the 100 Powerful Women in Sales. And this is where I told you it was a list of 100 people, and it literally followed exactly to a T what I talked about. The research, the creative, the blog posts, I mean, that blog post ended up being 10,000 words when it was done.
Wow. Okay.
We published that outreach to 100, all 100 women, people that we didn't have emails for. I reached out to privately on LinkedIn.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. Talk to me about, if you don't have their email, can you do the exact same thing over direct messages?
Yeah. So on LinkedIn, obviously you can attach an image. It's possible. But what I found the most success with is saying, hey there, we just featured you on a list. Here's the name of the list. I'd love to send you some information in your personalized card, social card. Can you just drop me your email? Because you can kind of get into it a little more over email. It's just
right.
Easier communication channel.
Do you find that most people are willing to do that?
Yeah. I've had maybe 5 or 10% never respond back. And some of those people tend to be those more well-known folks
right.
that maybe you're not connected with.
Or maybe they've got somebody managing their accounts for them, right?
Exactly. So I reached out to all 100 women both times. When I first started doing these types of no-cost programs, the thing that took me by surprise when you're dealing with this communication phase was the number of people that replied back. And you'll have the same thing if you take this advice and you go do it. The number of people that replied back and said stuff like, you just made my day. I was having a crappy day, and to see this come through, I'm amazed. Thank you so much. Or one time I got an email from someone's manager. The manager said, you just made my employee's day. She's telling everyone in the office how excited she is. So you got like these really, really heartfelt replies, and you see immediately on, this was the other thing I didn't expect. You see immediately on LinkedIn, people like updating their headline. So instead of just saying founder of whatever, it's now saying founder of and 100 most powerful women or 25, whatever, you know, because it, again, it's this validation for them. They feel like they won an award. And it's good for their personal brand. So those are probably two things when you're in this communication phase.
Yeah.
That was probably two things that I was not expecting when it happened.
For those that have been around for a long time, might remember me before Social Media Examiner, I had a blog called Michael Stelzner's Writing White Papers blog. And every year I came out with the top 10 blogs for writers. I would give people a little image that they could put on the side of their blog that showed the year that they won the award. And I got to tell you, people went nuts over getting those kind of things because depending on the niche you're in, there isn't any kind of official awards thing, right? And people crave acknowledgement and recognition for their hard work. And they really love it when somebody, especially if it's somebody that they might've heard of before, goes out of their way to bring them praise and publicity and acknowledgement, right?
Absolutely.
I know there is a next part of this, right? So let's say, you know, you've done the 50 or 10 or 15 or 100 and you've got the outreach and some of those people are going to post on the socials and stuff and drive traffic back to your site. But there is yet another step to this, right? So what is your fourth step?
Yeah. So, well, everything's out there. It's published. You have people sharing and what have you. You definitely need to measure. You want to be able to report back on the success of the campaign. So you're looking at total reach and in total engagements, traffic back to the website, metrics like that. I would hope to think that that was an automatic that people would always want to report on their campaigns.
I was thinking about the deepening of the relationship.
Yep,
right?
Exactly.
I know you're about to go there. So tell us, you know, obviously some people are going to emerge from this list super engaged, right? And some of these people are going to drive incredible engagement, which is going to be a good thing for your brand. And what do we do with that?
So one thing that I don't believe in and I advise against is short-term transactional relationships. In transaction, I'm not necessarily meaning money. I'm just meaning I outreach to you and that's gone. And you should always be looking to deepen a relationship, to grow it, to extend it, to be something long-term. So that's by a number of ways. You can invite them on your podcast. You can invite them to co-create a content, maybe come guest post on your blog. One thing that I found very successful, I've executed multiple times, is to draft an ebook with their contributions. So, but you want to make it low effort on their part, right? So to come say, hey, write an article for this ebook. No, the best thing is take that list right now. You're going to go back out to it and send them a simple question that they can answer. Hey, listen, congrats again. We're making an ebook. I would love for your contribution to this. Can you just send me a couple lines about it? Whatever X, whatever fits your brand and is associated with them, right? If the sales list, it was, you know, how has the pandemic impacted your sales or something like that, right? Something that they deal with and have dealt with in their professional lives. And then you collect those responses. And in that case, you develop an ebook, you organize it however the kind of responses guide you. And then you start this process all over again, just like a flywheel. You're going to create the cards again, but this time include their quote or maybe a truncated version of their quote. Because my experience has been, even when you ask people for two lines, sometimes you get three paragraphs.
Right.
So sometimes you have to truncate that a bit, but you're going to create those quote cards, essentially these LinkedIn cards or whatever, social cards. But then you're going to go back out to them pretty much the same exact thing. Here's your card. Thank you so much for being part of this. Here's the landing page with the ungated ebook. Do not gate it. The ungated ebook. Thank you. And not only have you accomplished deepening the relationship, because once again, you're featuring them, but selfishly for the brand, you have a whole nother round of all of that social exposure. Because now you've had that person or people share that they were named to this list. Some time goes by, a month or whatever it takes to go through this whole process. And now they're going to share that they contributed to this ebook. You've had that happen twice, and apparently my computer decided to put in a thumbs up. So
for those of you that didn't see the the video side of it, Justin clearly has a Mac. And you do symbols and it shows up on the screen. Other things that I'm thinking about is end of the year predictions for the next year. You can go to these people and ask them what their predictions are, or you can use them maybe to respond to industry news. And then you can get their obviously quotes, and you could do articles specifically on, like, here's so-and-so's perspective on whatever big news happened in the industry. I would imagine you could even, if you have an email newsletter, you could profile them every once in a while inside the newsletter. I mean, there's no shortage of things that you could do, right, Justin?
Absolutely not. I mean, it depends on how many communication channels you have and can think of, right? I mean,
right.
All the way up to, I mean, if you deepen a relationship enough, and most people don't have this, so I'm, you know, but if in people like your case and others that run conferences, some of those relationships started all the way back here.
And now they're speaking at your conference every year or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then they're helping to promote that. Like, I mean, this just never kind of ends as you build that relationship.
It's so cool. Justin, this has been really, really valuable for so many people. If somebody wants to reach out to you on the socials, what's your preferred social platform and where do they find you? And then also, if they want to reach out to you or in any other way, is there any website or anything you want to send them to?
The best way to find me is on LinkedIn, and it's just Justin and L-E-V as in Victor Y. I know it'll all be spelled out, but yeah, so LinkedIn is the best way. If you want to see photos of my cat and travels and whatnot, find me over on Instagram. But those are the two main areas to hunt me down these days.
Justin, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all your insights with us. We're so much better because of it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, if you missed anything, we took all the notes for you over at socialmediaexaminer.com/609. If you're new to the show, be sure to follow us. If you've been a longtime listener, would you let your friends know about this show? I'm at Stelzner on Facebook, at @Mike_Stelzner on Twitter/X. And do check out our other shows, the Marketing Agency Show and the Social Media Marketing Talk Show. This brings us to the end of the Social Media Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you next week. I hope you make the best out of your day, and may your marketing keep evolving.
The Social Media Marketing Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Want more good stuff? Sign up for our top-notch social marketing newsletter. We deliver it straight into your inbox 3 days a week. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com /getupdates.